Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
Hello.
It's the Ron Kelly Show.
Hey, yes.
The news you want.
Is the perception still that a black man with a gun is a criminal?
With the topics you need.
Marching might have been good for back in the day, but what kind of effectiveness is marching have on society today?
The Ron Kelly.
Black males 18 to 24 years old have highest homicide offending rate.
4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific. It's the Ron Kelly Show.
So don't get it twisted. Get it twisted.
On blogtalkradio.com.
And good morning, everybody, and welcome. It's the Ron Kelly Show for a Sunday. It's December 14th, 2014. Hope you got your Christmas shopping done. I haven't even started yet, but hopefully somebody out there has got their shopping done. According to the last statistics from the Black Friday turned out to be a Red Friday. But anyway, hopefully that will turn around. In any case, it's the Ron Kelly Show, everybody. We got an action-packed show for you this morning. And let me just take a second here to introduce, I like to call him the unflappable one. He's the incomparable Lamont Gates. Good morning, Lamont. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Ron. Thank you. Glad to be here, as usual.
Glad to have you here, Lamont. All right, so I can't breathe. I can't breathe. The NBA players and the NFL players are wearing the I Can't Breathe t-shirts. We got an action-packed show for you this morning. We'll be talking about the I Can't Breathe t-shirts that are being worn by NBA superstars as well as NFL players. We'll also talk about the Cromnibus Bill, Lamont, that was passed last night under the cover of darkness. The Cromnibus Bill that was passed last night. We'll talk about that. And also the police shooting of the 12-year-old boy in Cleveland who was holding a toy gun. Did the cop react too fast? Was it an accident? And should he have known better? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more right here on the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates. All right, Lamont, so I read a story this morning in the Sporting News that these players that are wearing the T-shirts may have an effect on the advertisers that advertise in the NFL and the NBA. What do you think of that? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I think the T-shirts, they make a statement that represents a particular side of this argument. All right? And as you know, and as everyone else knows, not everyone has the exact same feel or not everybody's taking the same position on this particular argument of concerning Eric Garner, who was whose death was labeled a homicide by a medical examiner when cops tried to arrest him, and he ended up dying on the scene. And, you know, advertisers will have an issue if they feel that the T-shirts are a bit too controversial. And I must say this question. People may question why an advertiser, for example, would pull out of a particular spot, but the reality of everything is that these advertisers, they have a right to pull out of something that they feel is too controversial, that they feel that they're a part of. So, you know, we're going to have to look at this a little bit closely to see if that actually transpires.
Well, shout out to my friends on friends and foes on on LinkedIn. It's become quite a bit of a, you know, Lamont, all these social media websites that were designated for certain things like the LinkedIn and some of the other sites are quickly turning into sounding boards.
MySpace.
They're turning into sounding boards for people's positions on some of the issues that have come up in society today. Especially on LinkedIn, for example, which is supposed to be a professional website where folks who professional people have a way of networking and getting with each other and possibly drumming up business between each other and making good connections, has turned into a social media type, Twitter type of situation where people are expressing their opinions about these things, Garner and Brown and some of the other things that are going on in society. So do you think, Lamont, and I've said this on Facebook earlier, that do you think that this may be the straw that has broken the camel's back? Because in New York last night, you know, I didn't even realize that they had a rally in New York last night. I was so focused on Washington. and there was a virtual sea of folks from one side of the street to the other, Lamont. You know, New York has some pretty wide streets. And just a sea of folks from one side to the other. And, you know, I heard, and you probably heard, too, I wanted your thoughts on that, that that the amount of people were downplayed in the media. What have you heard about that? And is it just more of the same we have going here, Lamont? What did you think about that? What are your thoughts?
You know, I heard that on a particular news broadcast this morning that there was an alleged downplay of the number of people that were participating at these rallies and protests. And I heard a lot of backlash against the media for doing so. But, you know, I think in these particular situations, especially with Michael Brown and Eric Garner, the media has been on the more liberal side. I can't see why they would downplay, you know, the number of protests and marches that's been going on because, I mean, if you, for example, were to read any particular newscast or any particular article concerning Eric Garner or Michael Brown, one of the immediate headlines that would jump out at you would be a white cop shoots unarmed black kid, you know, or a black unarmed teenager killed by a cop who was white. So to me, it seemed that the media was sort of leaning towards the protesters and the marcher side, and kind of fueling the argument that they have marching up and down the streets to the point where I can't see that they would downplay the number of people that are actually marching. I mean, we had one going on right here in my alma mater in Jersey over at William Patterson University, to which I was surprised. Because all the years that I was there, I've never seen any uproar or marching or protesting going on. But it just shows you the effect that this particular case had on the more liberal society.
So yeah, I got, you know, and you're absolutely right, Lamont. You know, and I'm very encouraged by it. I mean, there was some violence. I understand there was a couple of pockets of violence that happened in the New York march last night. They said that a protester was arrested as he was about to throw a garbage can down on a police officer off the Brooklyn Bridge, which probably would have hurt. But other than that, there wasn't a whole lot of violence for the amount of people that was there. But I got to tell you, Lamont, I'm very encouraged by this. You know, the Notre Dame women, and it's not just black players and black NBA players, black NFL players. I mean, the Notre Dame women's basketball team came out with I Can't Breathe t-shirts, and there's no, I didn't see any sisters or black women on that squad. As a matter of fact, Lamont, the picture that was posted on the internet showed about five or six young white girls, basketball players, and they're wearing the I Can't Breathe t-shirts. So I think there's a fear here, Lamont, that this is, this groundswell, it's not just about black folks, it's about, you know, it's about everybody now. So I think there's kind of a fear here that this is, that this may finally be the straw that broke the camel's back, in other words. What do you think?
Well, you know, again, we've always seen a more liberal society, and it doesn't matter what their race were. In the 1960s, you had, you know, liberal whites who were marching for civil rights, and just like today, you know, it's reminiscent of what's going on today. You have more liberal whites marching for something that they saw was a clear injustice that was done by a police officer, specifically concerning the Eric Garner case, and you're going to see this. You're going to, you know, we always have a more liberal society out there that does not care about race. So that needs to be well understood and taken into account.
Well, let me pull this up, Lamont. These things have mostly, even with Trayvon Martin. You know, for example, I tend to think that there's a lot more other ethnic groups involved in this, Lamont, this time than even during the Trayvon Martin, for example. I think there's a lot more people involved in this than even in Trayvon Martin. Because there's protests going on all over the country. It's not just in, you know, they talked about the D.C. Situation, but these marches are going on all across the country. And as you said, William Patterson University, that's been mum for the most part in regards to social issues. And if they're protesting, then that gives it, you know, that shows you the gravity of the effect that this thing has happened, not just on black people, but on society at large, Lamar.
Yeah, well, let me pose a question now. With all this marching going on across the country, as you accurately have stated, do you believe that marching is actually really going to make a change or make a difference? You know, again, there's no indictment. I don't think they're even planning to overrule what has already been stated. So then now the question is, what is all the marching really for? You know, the T-shirts. You go back to the T-shirts. I can't breathe. Some people are, some celebrities, I'm not saying that this is a fact, but, you know, we can play devil's advocate here a little bit. Some celebrities could be just using these T-shirts to circle themselves, in other words, put themselves a little bit more into the spotlight. And I know you've posted things on your Facebook. I don't know if you were subliminally going after someone, but the charge seemed to be that some people are partaking in these or setting up events in the name of these particular marches and in the name of these particular cases just to shine spotlight on themselves. Do you believe that that's happening in some sort of way, especially amongst the celebrities that are putting forth these T-shirts?
Well, yeah, well, not necessarily celebrities, Lamont, but I think that there are some folks on the ground level who are trying to make a name for themselves. These type of things always happen when there's a celebrated issue going on like this, you know, the Eric Garner verdict and so on. So there's always going to be people who are trying to promote themselves, like putting videos of themselves on Facebook, you know, their own speeches, not, you know, somebody else's. But I mean, who's it about? You know, and there are people who are doing it. Here's what William Gross said, Lamar. William Gross is the police superintendent in Boston. Here's what he said about the protest.
These folks' right to peaceful protest is at least making law enforcement agencies take a look at their policies. If you're in their policies, their academy curriculum, to see if they're doing the best they can do.
And see, and that's the whole thing, Lamar. I don't think that, you know, what's happened has happened. You know, in other words, with the Eric Garner and Michael Brown, what's happened has happened. See, now as far as the marches reversing anything that's happened so far, no, that's not going to happen. But I do think that these marches, and I stand corrected because I do have one of my promos saying that marching doesn't do any good, so I do stand corrected. But so pardon me, but I think that what these marches will do, Lamont, is will change the system, because the system is screwed up. The system is screwed up because these officers are quick to say they're doing what they're trained to do. You know, they're quick to say that.
Right.
So the system needs to be changed, number one, how police officers are trained, because you're not going to take racism out of anybody's heart or anybody's head. That's not going to happen. So training is not going to do that. But I think that the system needs to be changed. And also because these local prosecutors and the police officers work hand in hand. They're friends. They attend each other's weddings. They go to barbecues at each other's houses. And local prosecutors depend heavily on the police, so they're not going to do anything to rock that, to upset that apple cart. So, number one, these marches will change how these police officers are trained. And secondly, well, I should say more importantly, you know, we'll have independent counsel come in and prosecute these cases, because the local prosecutors have something to lose if they go against the local police, Lamont. So I don't think that as far as reversing anything, no. But I do believe that hopefully these marches will change procedure, Lamont, and how police officers are trained and how they do things.
Yes, well, I think, in my personal opinion, I think the videotape had a lot to do with changing procedure. You know, the mayor, everyone up to the mayor was able to see the video, and a lot of people commented on how chokeholds were not part of the police protocol or procedure in arresting someone. So I think with that video, you know, with the internet, everything going viral, a combination of the media, and as you say, a combination of the marching and the civil disobedience, I think you're going to see more changes going on. But marching alone, you know, I think it won't change a decision. It won't change the minds of the people who are up front, who have the ability to make and legislate laws. But I think with a combination of all those things, we may start to see some changes being made.
Here's Associated Press. Here's Associated Press correspondent Julie Walker Lamont. She's with a marcher by the name of Neville Edwards. Here's her interview with one of the marchers yesterday. Let's take a listen.
Chanting, "I can't breathe," these marchers are demanding Officer Daniel Pantaleo be indicted for Eric Garner's death and want an independent prosecutor to oversee these types of cases. Neville Edwards says he has to take part.
We have never seen anything like this in response to police brutality. I'm doing this for my kids and yours and my grandkids and yours, my dear.
Organizers are calling this the Millions March and mapped out a route from Washington Square Park to Midtown to Police Plaza. Julie Walker, New York.
And see, now she did say that the protesters are marching for some kind of sort to revisit the Pantaleo Garner verdict. But, you know, I tend to think that that hopefully this will change the system, Lamont, the way things are done. And any time a police officer kills an unarmed person, it should be a special prosecutor. I need to let everybody know this portion of the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates is powered by Davis Integrated Medicine. For more information, it's davisintegratedmedicine.com. That's davisintegratedmedicine.com. The phone number is 973-783-3606. That's 973-783-3606. Davis Integrated Medicine, live life well. All right, everybody. Joining me this morning, of course, as I just said, Lamont Gates, former host of Rhea Social Talk, has been gracious enough to join us here on the Ron Kelly Show. We are encouraged and delighted to have Lamont here with us today and in the future. All right, Lamont. What are your overall thoughts on this? I mean, we did have a little bit of a head butting on the Brown case. Change direction in regards to this case, not your overall take on things, but you changed direction, so to speak. So what exactly, now, was it just the video that affected you? Has it affected others in your differing opinions between the Brown case and the Garner case?
Well, the difference here is that in the Brown case, the understanding is that we had this teenager trying to attack a police officer who called for backup. Backup did not make it there in time, so he had to do what was best in order to preserve his life. In this particular case in New York, although he was resisting arrest, although he was doing something illegal by selling these untaxed cigarettes, and I know a lot of people say, well, what's the big deal? But the reality is that the officers can arrest you, and if you resist arrest, you know, that just makes things 100 times worse. However, I do believe that, as the medical examiner stated, the death was a homicide, which doesn't mean that the officer murdered him, per se. What that means is that the death was not caused by natural illness. So something caused the death. Obviously, it was the fact that he couldn't breathe. Because he was held in this particular hold, a chokehold, some people argue it wasn't a chokehold, but whatever the case is, there is no doubt in my mind that that man's death was caused by these officers who were steadily on top of him. And for that, I believe some sort of manslaughter charge at least should have came to the table. I believe that there was a gross negligence that was done here, and that negligence, in my personal opinion, seems to have been overlooked. Now, again, I'm not saying that this officer walked down the block with the rest of the officers in order to attack this man physically, in order to kill this man, or that they had some sort of racial issue with it. I do see it as a resisting of arrest. However, I believe something should have gave concerning the fact that this man died in their custody.
Absolutely, Mon. I agree with you. Half of it. I agree with you.
Well, I figured that, yeah.
I absolutely agree with half Lamont, but you know, absolutely the video showing exactly what happened, and then there for to be a no bill on that, it's just outrageous. And then and we have to take into consideration, Lamont, these folks, especially on LinkedIn, and the people that I've turned into enemies on LinkedIn, have are quick to say that this is not about race, but I mean, there's so many racial aspects to this thing, the racial makeup of the victim versus the predator or the police officer, the makeup of the grand jury where there were 14 whites, there were nine non-whites, which included 5 African Americans, you know, and I just these things can't be overlooked. Just like in the Michael Brown case. There was a clear lackadaisical attitude, which has been substantiated by legal scholars all around the country, from white and black, who have said that there was a lack of vigilance in the in the efforts by the LA County, the St. Louis County prosecutor. There was a lack of vigilance in the prosecution, or lack thereof, of that case. And we can't deny that. I mean, the legal scholars of all ilk and all walks of life, all total racial mix, have all said that, Lamont. We can't overlook that. And I think that the system needs to change, because again, the police officers and the prosecutors work hand in hand every day, like they're friends. They go to each other's weddings, and they hang out with each other, and they high-five each other when they prosecute a case successfully after a person's been arrested. So they work hand in hand, and the prosecutor is just not going to want to turn the police against him. And I think that that's what happened in both of these cases. Now, sans a video in the first one, that's why it turned out the way it did. But even in the second one, you have a video. And another thing too, Lamont, this just kicks President Obama's proclamation that the police officers would wear cameras, kicks that to the curb, because there was a camera and we still had a no bill verdict.
Well, let's go back to the grand jury that you stated. What did you say, that there were 14 people, and
Twenty-three jurors, 14 white, and 9 what they called non-black, but as it turned out, there were 5 African Americans and 4, I guess, would be Latino or Asian or Native American or some other.
All right. Now, with that, you would have to prove that those Latino, Asian, and non-blacks are also racist. Now, how do you do that? This is what I was arguing with you about on the last show when we discussed Michael Brown. How can you say that the non-whites are racist? And first of all, how could you even say all the whites on there are racist, and that they looked at this case by way of a race case and said, well, he's black, so let's just not indict the officer because we don't like black people? You'd also have to think that the 5 blacks are racist too, because, if they if they all agreed with this no indictment, then you have to say that everyone there was racist, including the blacks and the non-blacks. So, and I have an issue with that. I don't believe that was the case. And also, when you mentioned that the officers were white and the suspect was black, and you have to look at that and say, well, there you go. Well, statistics tell us that the crime rates in the black community, as you very well know, I don't have to tell you this, are higher than that of any other community. So 9 out of 10, if you got whites who are policing the streets and the crime rates are high amongst blacks, then that's what you're always going to face. You see what I'm saying? Rudy Giuliani made the statement, and I believe I said this to you on our last time we spoke, that if you don't want whites patrolling your black neighborhoods, then stop the black-on-black violence. Stop the high crime rates in the black community. So that's always going to happen. You're always going to have a white cop if white cops are patrolling black communities, you're always going to have these white cops stopping blacks because the crime rate is out of control over there. So that's my issue. And again, I don't see this as race. I see it as negligence. To me, race is to say that he purposely went out to murder this man because he doesn't like black people. And why Eric Gardner? Why not kill someone else? Where are all the other victims, the black victims, so to speak, that these white racist officers also had contact with? Why a man who was actually out there selling something illegal? That's my argument.
Right, and I agree with you, Lamont. I agree with you in your point. But again, there needs to be a changing of the guard, so to speak, because you're right. There's no way to prove that. You're 100% right. There's no way to prove that those 14 white jurors were racist. But there's no way to disprove it either. I mean, just the hint of impropriety, you know, with the racial makeup of the jury. See, that now, if you had 14 black people and they said no, Bill, okay, that'd be a different story, because there's no the racial, you know, the racial inequality, for lack of a better word, wouldn't matter, because, you know, if you had an overwhelming amount of black folks who saw the video and said no, okay. I mean, how can you argue with that? But because the racial makeup of the jury was overwhelmingly white, while you can't prove that those jurors were racist, but it does leave a stink in the air in regards to the verdict and how the jurors came to it. Lamont, we'll talk about that later on in the show, and we're going to talk about the Cromnibus Bill, Lamont. The Cromnibus Bill that was passed by the Senate last night, 456-40 vote. And we'll talk about the Cromnibus Bill, and it's just open season on President Obama. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates, and we're on blogtalkradio.com.
The Ron Kelly Show on blogtalkradio.com and on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
Some statistics are surprising, some are unbelievable, and some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%, and that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Now, back with more of the fastest growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show. With Lamont Gates.
Absolutely, everybody. It's the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show if you're just joining us. Be here at 10 o'clock next Sunday morning, 10 a.m. The Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates. It's December 14th already, Lamont. 2014, the year that was. It just flew by. There's only a couple of weeks left for Christmas and then New Year's and 2015. And what a year it's going to be. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning. This portion of the Ron Kelly Show is powered by Birkett Promotions. www.birkettpromotions.com for the best variety of well-made, made right here in the USA, by the way, well-made promotional items. Go to www.birkettpromotions, that's B-I-R-K-E-T-T, promotions.com. Mention the Ron Kelly Show and receive 10% off of an already great price. That's birkettpromotions.com, B-I-R-K-E-T-T, promotions.com. All right, everybody, back to the show. Lamont, the Cromnibus Bill was passed last. And see, this is just, it's just embarrassing, Lamont Gates. Embarrassing. What the GOP, the all-out, you know, war against President Obama. The crime of his bill, as it was called, provides funding, Lamont Gates, for most of government departments through September of 2015, except for the Department of Homeland Security. Now, that agency will only be funded through the end of February, at which point Republicans have threatened to deny the Department of Homeland Security, for God's sake, deny the money it needs to implement President Barack Obama's executive order expanding immigration reform. Now, The Hill reported that the vote came about after Tea Party Senator Ted Cruz, Republican from Texas, criticized House Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and House Speaker John Boehner for pushing that the 1600 bill page be passed not long after it was introduced. Now, this is just, I mean, this is just outrageous, Lamont. Outrageous that the Republicans are so incensed by President Obama's executive order in regards to immigration reform that they will stoop to any level, Lamont Gates, any level to derail this president.
But this is no surprise. This has been going on since he was elected, took office in 2009, as a matter of fact. If you recall, Mitch McConnell's statements around that time frame said that our primary goal, and this is him speaking as a representative of the House of Representatives, our primary goal is to not allow President Obama to get a second term. Now, how in the world could that be a primary goal when you have so many damaging issues going on in the country, you know? So they've been, from day one, opposed of this president and would stop at nothing to the point of a government shutdown, all right, to oppose every single thing he's trying to put on the floor. Now, in terms of Homeland Security, let me just say this. There are many people who agree, Democrats and Republicans alike, that the military-industrial complex is just too big. There's too much money going into it, all right? But I believe at a particular time that we're in right now, especially when we have incidents where ISIS members who were originally Americans went over to Iraq/Syria, who have the potential to come back here and plan an attack. Look, we had not too long ago, about a month ago or so, we had a deranged man attack a police officer in New York City with a hatchet, if you remember that. We just recently had a shooting in a synagogue also in New York City. So I don't believe that this is the time to be arguing over how big the military industrial complex is, especially when we have threats of potential ISIS attacks that could spread right into this country at any given time. So, yes. The GOP is definitely wrong for doing this, and if this is based on President Barack Obama's executive action on immigration, then their priorities are definitely in a disarray.
How many more insults? You know, just how many more insults can this president? How many more insults? How many? It's absolutely ridiculous that there's even a movement, Lamont, to deny the president the right to give the State of Union address in the House chamber. Just outrageous. I mean, how you gonna? The president is the leader. Okay, he's the leader of the free world, but he's not. You know, but he can't. I mean, you can't tell the president where he can't go. You can't tell the president where he can't go. Here's Jackie Quinn from AP, Lamont, with Representative Richard Hastings of Washington, Representative Maxine Waters of California, and John Boehner of Ohio. Let's listen to this nonsense. Maybe not from Maxine Waters, but let's listen to this nonsense.
These are two six 2:19. The days are 2:06.
The bill that finances government agencies through next September was contentious for some Republicans because it doesn't block President Obama's executive actions on immigration. But Democrats like Maxine Waters don't like the rollback of banking restrictions.
Stop supporting a bill that would allow the biggest banks in America to rip off the people one more time.
President Obama backed a bill that prevents a government shutdown, and after the vote and saying goodbye to a retiring congressman, House Speaker John Boehner,
my job tonight is to say thank you and Merry Christmas.
Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Now, and that's the other piece of the bill, Lamont, that rolls back the regulations that were placed on Wall Street after the giant poker game, the Ponzi scheme, whatever you want to call it, where what happened with Wall Street, where they sold mortgage-backed securities, and the mortgages were held by people who couldn't even afford to have them. After all the trickery and the tomfoolery that went on with giving folks houses they couldn't afford back in the heyday of the housing market. So now, hidden in that bill is an effort to roll back Wall Street regulations that were implemented after the first, after the collapse of Wall Street in 2008. So, you just have to scratch your head. You know, isn't Wall Street doing well enough now, Lamont, without this?
Oh, Wall Street's doing very well. The numbers are up. And when you say scratch your head, no, you don't scratch your head, because you already know what these Republicans had in mind from day one. They're in bed with these lobbyists, all right? It's these big business people who fund, all right, who throw the funds behind these Republicans. You know, presidential elections coming up, these big businesses are throwing major funds behind these Republican candidates, hoping that they can get them in office. Remember, Citizens United, the Supreme Court case that said money is speech. We heard from, I believe it was Scalia, who said money equals speech. There should be no limit on how much money you can throw behind a candidate. Whoever has the most money should be able to get their guy in office, which is horrible. Because now what we're saying is, if you got money, if you have an extraordinary amount of money, then your guy should get in office, even though that person is totally not qualified for the job. And that's exactly what these Republicans are trying to do. They're getting behind big business, because at the end of the day, big business puts them right back into the office, whereas Obama totally blew off the lobbyists right from the start, way before he became president. He spoke out against the lobbyists and what their true intentions were, and how they're actually taking a part in destroying this country. So it's no surprise to me that that's what they're getting behind. Some of the companies who helped to put this nation in debt, who went into debt themselves under the Bush administration, they got their bailout. Some of them, like AIG, spent up all their money, went back and asked for another bailout. It's just disgusting, Ron.
It absolutely is. Oh, by the way, John Dingell, the African-American congressman from Michigan, was retiring. That's what John Boehner, House Speaker John Boehner, referred to earlier in his remarks in the interview, that John Dingell, who is a congressman from Michigan, served 59 years. How do you... I mean, that's almost... That's two terms. I mean, that's two lifetimes of work for the average person. Almost 60 years he served in the Congress, so...
An argument for that, or rather an argument against that by many people, is saying, just as the President of the United States has term limits, we need to start throwing term limits on these congressmen.
Right, because Harlem Congressman Rangel has been a congressman for as long as alive, just about. So,
that's
just outrageous.
That's a prime example why we need term limits, yeah.
Yeah, term limits, definitely, because we definitely need some turnover. Lamont, here is, I think this is Mark Smith with Minority Leader Pelosi and House Speaker John Boehner.
For this topsy-turvy Congress, it was a sight. Relentless arm twisting by President Obama and GOP leaders working together. The president lobbied Democrats like House Leader Nancy Pelosi furious that funding the government through September will mean easing bank rules.
Blackmail. We don't get a bill unless Wall Street gets its taxpayer coverage.
While the relieved House Speaker John Boehner quieted Tea Party outrage, Obama's immigration actions are untouched.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas.
Meantime, while the Senate debates today, a short-term bill will keep Uncle Sam's lights on. Mark Smith, Washington.
You see, now that's the, you know, and the president has supported this. The president is supporting this. And that's kind of strange because, you know, he was the one who quote-unquote, fixed everything and had those stopgap measures put in place to stop Wall Street from, you know, from betting, using, you know, playing playing roulette wheel, spinning the wheel with somebody else's money. So, but I think that the President Lamont just was interested in keeping the government running, and I guess he felt that that was a small price to pay, I should say, in order to keep the government running. Because that's the strange thing about this, is that the President supported this bill knowing that the rollbacks to the Wall Street regulations was in it.
Well, this wouldn't be the first time that President Obama had his hands tied. We remember a few years ago when he wanted to expand unemployment, the Republicans had him against the wall, basically saying, we won't sign on for that unless you extend the Bush tax cuts. So he had to continue extending the Bush tax cuts in order to get this this bipartisanship on extending unemployment. It is not the first time. And you bring up a good argument. Keeping the government open, not allowing it to shut down, because God forbid, if we had another one, guess who would be to blame for shutting it down this time? You know?
Yeah,
and secondly,
yeah.
secondly, President Obama, he really doesn't want to lay more people off again in the federal government. It just makes no sense that these workers who are coming to work, doing their job, working hard, who have nothing to do with this cat and mouse game that Congress is playing, it's not fair that they would have to get shut down and laid off again when, you know, this can be resolved. So I think that's what the president did before they went to break because, you know, look, let's face it, people, as you said earlier at the top of the show, they're shopping. There are a lot of them are doing their holiday shopping. It just wouldn't be right if they were laid off again.
No, it wouldn't, Lamont. We got enough trouble as it is. Well, you know, the silver lining to this, Lamont Gates, the silver lining to this is that the bill does provide funding for the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare, the health care law is known as Obamacare, and immigration reform. So that's the silver lining to this, is that there will be, you know, that folks who are struggling to have health insurance will not be affected, and the funding for the Obamacare won't be held back in this spending bill. So that's, I guess, you know, and the president had to consider that as well. The folks who were he had to weigh the deregulation of Wall Street versus the shutdown of the government with laying off hundreds of thousands of folks and people being denied health coverage because there would no longer be funding for Obamacare and the premiums would be too high for many of the folks here in the good old USA. All right, everybody, we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back in just a moment with more. And we'll be right back. It's the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates, and we're on blogtalkradio.com.
The Ron Kelly Show on blogtalkradio.com. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
Dad, you're supposed to jump over the rope.
One more time.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
There was a need in talk radio, and one man will fill that need.
What kind of effectiveness is marching out of society today?
And you too can be a witness. The Ron Kelly Show on YourTalkRadio.com. Now, back with more of the fastest growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show.
Absolutely, everybody. It's the Ron Kelly Show with Lamont Gates right here on blogtalkradio.com. It's every Sunday morning, 10 a.m. till 11 a.m. right here, blogtalkradio.com. The phone number here is 347-426-3214. That's 347-426-3214. Lamont, I think that the shooting of the Cleveland boy, 12-year-old Tariq, let me pull this up. What have you heard?
Right.
Lamont, I haven't heard a lot of people chanting about that situation in Cleveland. What have you heard?
Well, I've read, and this is making headlines. However, it's not garnering the same reactions as the Michael Brown and Eric Garner cases, respectively. But here we have a 12-year-old who was reported by someone who called 911 to have had a gun, all right? And they said to the dispatcher, I don't know if it's a real gun or not. It may not be real, but it's definitely someone walking around with what appears to be a gun, a weapon. So dispatcher gets on the horn and dispatches to the police officers on duty. There is a person with a weapon, a gun, so to speak, so on and so forth. So police pull up, arrive where this 12-year-old boy is standing. And this is caught on video as well. I mean, one officer gets out of the car. They demand his hands up. And instead of his hands going up, he seems to be reaching for something. And so the cop shoots him. Dead on the scene. They say it took about 2 seconds for the whole ordeal to go down. And so now this cop is in some heat and in some trouble because now they're saying, again, you shot an unarmed a black person. Not only was the an unarmed black person, it was an unarmed 12-year-old black person. So now this is sort of gaining some steam, not as much as the Eric Garner case, but a lot of people are dissenting on this as well. Now, the question is, however, was the officer at fault or was this an accident? Here you have a gun. You see a gun. You don't know if it's real or fake. How does an officer respond to such incident?
Well, there's several things here, Lamont, that again, with the absence of a video camera, this may go by. But, all right, here, for example, they said when the Cleveland police officer drew their own weapons and told the 12-year-old boy to raise his hands, he reportedly did not comply. Instead of raising his hands, Tamir Rice reportedly lifted his shirt, reached for the gun sticking out of his waistband, and pulled it out. Now, it doesn't say that he pointed it at them. It just says that he pulled it out. The Cleveland police officer opened fire on Tamir Rice, shooting him twice. One bullet hit him in the abdomen and the other in the head. I mean, would you give me a effing break that you're going to shoot a 12-year-old kid in the head?
Now, you made the statement just a few seconds ago when you said he didn't point it at them. But that's exactly the object. You don't give him a chance to point it at you. When you arrive on the scene and you see him reaching, and you see, especially when you see him pull the gun out, and you see that it's a gun, the common sense thing to do is to pull your weapon and hit him before he hits you. Now, let me tell you who's really at fault here, however. The article goes on. The dispatcher said to the police officers on duty that someone had a gun, that they got a report from someone calling that someone had a gun. What they did not tell the cops was that it may be a fake gun. See, that's what the original person said to the 911
operator when they called. It may be a fake gun. The dispatcher did not relay the fake message over to the cops, so the cops assumed that it was just a weapon. So now you pull up on the scene, you see them reaching for the weapon. The next thing that's going to happen, obviously, is the cops are going to pull their weapon, and it ended up in a fatal shooting. So I think the person who's really at fault here is that dispatcher. Whatever you want to do with that dispatcher, I don't know. You want to suspend them, you want to fire them, you want to reprimand them. But, I think if this were to go to some sort of grand jury, these cops would also be off the hook. And if that is the case, let's see if there's more protesting and marching over this.
I think it's going to be more of the same, Lamont, because it says, now the story I'm reading is Cleveland police fatally shot a 12-year-old boy with a toy gun on Saturday afternoon. Now it says Tamir Rice pointed a BB gun that he had pulled from his waistband at the Cleveland, Ohio police officers. Now, while the police dispatcher had relayed to the law enforcement officers that the gun could be fake, the orange tip on the end of the gun, which notes that the weapon is a toy, was missing. Now, I do know that that on fake guns, Lamont, they do have an orange tip.
Right. That's a clear indicator that it's fake, yes.
Right, the clear indicator that the gun was fake. But now it says here that the police dispatcher did say that the gun could be fake. Now, this is a 12-year-old kid. I mean, a 12-year-old kid. And here's what, what disturbs me about this, Lamont, and we're not even talking, this could have been a 12-year-old white kid. I still would have been as incensed as I am about this. And here's what, now, Cleveland Police Patrolmen Association President Jeff Fulmer told the media that the officers were responding to what they thought was a male threatening people with a gun at a public park. Now, here we go with the training. We are not trained to shoot people in the leg. If we pull that trigger, we feel our lives are in danger. And see, here we go again. Here we go again with the, you know, our life is in danger. And that's really all you need to say that you felt like your life was in danger. Now, I'm a licensed gun owner, and I have a license to carry a weapon. Now, let me shoot somebody and say I thought my life was in danger. Yeah, I can say that while they're putting me in the cell, you know? So,
I believe that the mistake that the 12-year-old made was instead of putting his hands up, he reached for the weapon, possibly to show the cops, look, it's a fake gun. But, you know, the cops didn't ask you to reach for a weapon. They asked you to put your hands up. So, you know, obviously he's a 12-year-old. He probably is not used to, you know, cop routine and putting hands up. I'm sure he wasn't arrested before. So I can definitely see where this is a situation gone bad and the cops had to react. Now, let me ask you something. You say you have a weapon. Now, let's say you're in an argument with someone. Let's say they go into their waistband and they pull a weapon. Is your first reaction to let them... Is your first reaction going to be just to let them see what else they can do with that weapon? Or if you're armed, are you going to pull your weapon and draw first, as they say, as they used to in the Wild Wild West, per se? Because that's what the streets are these days.
Well, I'm certainly not going to shoot the person in the head, Lamont. You know, here you have a 12-year-old kid, you know, and I have marksman status at the range, you know. And you see all the, you know, when you go to the range, for example, you know, you're taught to, you know, to shoot upper body mass. That means from head to waist. That's what you're taught to shoot at. But there has to be, you know, I mean, you're not a robot. And there has to be some level of humanity. You know, just like police officers get caught with child pornography and stuff. I mean, you're not a robot. There has to be some level of humanity. I mean, you know, just to shoot a 12-year-old kid, I mean, you know he's a boy by looking at him. You know he's a boy.
That goes back to the argument also of a and this is a bit off topic, but It goes back to the argument of a military personnel over in Iraq or somewhere like that, and a young boy approaches them, all right? And as he gets closer and closer to them, they realize immediately that, wait a minute, he's carrying a bomb. Now, he's 8 years old. Do you shoot him or do you let that bomb explode? What do you think?
I'll say again, Lamont, I'm sorry.
This whole thing is reminiscent of a military man, of military personnel over in Iraq.
Right.
You know, obviously
right.
They have suicide bombers over there. Here you have an 8-year-old approaching military personnel. He's getting closer and closer. You've got your weapon drawn. And later on, as he gets closer to you, you recognize he has a bomb underneath his shirt. Now, what do you do? Do you shoot the 8-year-old or actually, you perceive that it may be a bomb. Do you shoot the 8-year-old, take him out, or do you wait to see if a bomb is going to blow you and your men to smithereens? You know, it's one of those questions.
Well, you know, it's a fact, Lamont, that they do use all kinds of people with suicide bombers. You know, that's to be expected. When you're in a situation like that, I mean, they do it all the time. You have people who wear the uniform, you know, people who wear United States Army personnel uniforms who walk into a crowd and blow the place up because no one expects them to be hostile. So if I'm in a situation where it's a clear, well, it's widely known that suicide bombers can be any age. If they're walking toward me now, if I'm telling them, I got to shoot them. I got to shoot them because you're in a wartime situation. You're not at a playground in Cleveland. It's a wartime situation, and you know for a fact that the suicide bombers come in all ages. Now, if somebody's coming towards you, and you if somebody's walking towards you and you're giving them a clear command, even if you're saying it in their own language and they're not stopping, then you have no other choice. But the what's being said about this is that the boy didn't really have a chance, and they're saying that he was shot, the cop, as soon as the cop got out of the car, he shot him 3 seconds later.
I think that's the difference. The fundamental difference is that they did see a gun. Granted, it was fake. Whereas you said you shoot the 8-year-old just on the knowledge, just on the belief that it's he's a terrorist because of the region. Now that little boy could have been bringing you food. You don't know. You didn't see the bomb, but you said you'd shoot him. These cops saw a weapon, and so they shot. So I think it's the same scenario. I think you guys would have done the same thing, even though you saw less than what the cops did. Now it is unfortunate. It's extremely unfortunate that it turned out to be a fake gun. But again, I think if this were to go to some sort of grand jury, it may not even go to that. I think they would side with the police, saying that they had no real knowledge that it was a fake gun, and they had to do what they had to do to protect themselves. Scary, scary world out there.
No, and that's a great analogy, Lamont. That's a great comparison to. There's an outstanding comparison as to what the police officers were facing. When they, came upon this kid with the gun. But, you know, there's a slight difference, and I get your point, and I understand it exactly. But, you know, you're talking about a wartime situation versus a kid on the street in Cleveland. You know, it's a wartime situation, and it's widely known that suicide bombers come in all shapes, sizes, and ages. And if somebody's now if this boy, let's say the boy kept walking toward them, if they said put it down, stop, and the boy kept walking toward them and they shot him, then you can be justified. I mean, it's a very similar situation, but there are some nuances that could have prevented police officers from firing upon this kid, especially after they had been told by the police dispatcher that it was a possibility that the weapon was fake. And this, I thought my life was in danger stuff has got to stop, Lamont. It's not enough, you know, because you can't prove it and you can't disprove it.
Yeah, we're going to have to keep our eyes on this as well.
Yeah, we will. All right, we got about 30 seconds, Lamont. Anything you want to say to the audience before we bounce out of here?
Well, yeah, I want to say I want to thank you for allowing me to come on your Sunday show, and I'm extremely glad that you moved it from Friday to Sunday, because, again, I think more people have the opportunity to listen in, and I definitely have a better chance to be on the show since the work week is just hectic for most people.
Yes, it is. All right, thank you, Lamont. We'll see you back here next week. Thank everybody for joining us. Enjoy your Sunday, and we're out of here.